Welcome to Inclusion for All Radio, a podcast and story sharing series that seeks to represent the voice of the poor and vulnerable groups in Nigeria. Our aim is to highlight the barriers that keep the poor excluded and advocate for their removal. Inclusion for All Radio, amplifying voices unheard. It's another episode of Inclusion for All Radio podcast series. My name is Chinasa Collins-Ogbo and I head the Inclusion for All Advocacy Initiative at Africa Practice. The topic for this episode is Financial Inclusion in Nigeria, the Stories Behind the Numbers. According to the 2021 Global FinTech Survey, the average rate of account ownership in developing economies increased by 8% over 4 years, with mobile money driving account ownership in sub-Saharan Africa. Lack of money, distance to the nearest financial institution, and insufficient documentation are consistently cited by unbanked adults as some of the primary reasons they do not have an account. A lack of documentation, including ID, was a critical barrier to accessing financial services, with 37% of unbanked adults noting that a lack of documentation is one reason they do not have a financial institution account. 30% of adults stated it as a barrier to opening a mobile money account. In Nigeria, 32% indicated a lack of documentation as a major barrier in accessing financial services. The report further revealed that the persistent gender gap in accessing financial services has remained, with women representing 54% of the unbanked population with no account. The majority of unbanked adults continue to be women, even in economies that have successfully increased account ownership and have small share of unbanked adults. Tolulope Babajide is our guest for this episode, and she will be sharing some stories to highlight why the inclusion gender gap persists in Nigeria. Tolu is a gender specialist with experience in gender programming, financial inclusion, and agricultural livelihoods. She is the gender network manager at FSD Africa, where she works primarily on the gender collaborative program across the 10 financial sector deepening organizations in Africa. Prior to now, she worked at Sahel Consulting as the financial inclusion and gender manager, where she led financial inclusion components of the Advancing Local Dairy Development in Nigeria program, which focuses on developing context-specific innovative financial products to improve the livelihoods of female dairy farmers. She previously served as the Partnerships and Innovations Advisor for the World Bank-funded Nigeria for Women project. Welcome, Tolulope. It's a pleasure to have you on Inclusion for All Radio.
Thank you, Chinasa, and I'm very happy to be here today.
Great. It's great to have you. So, as introduced, the purpose of this conversation is to highlight the human side to some of the financial inclusion numbers, you know, that reference some of the data from the 2021 Global FinTech report. As you know, there's a lot of data that sort of highlights the challenges, the reasons for the financial inclusion gap in the world, in Nigeria. But one thing I find is when you put a human story or element to those data, then it makes it more real, right? And so I'd like to first of all start with your work experience. So a lot of your work has been focused on access to financial services for marginalized women. Can you share with us your experience working with these communities and highlighting the most recurrent challenges they're faced with? And, you know, is it your experience, is it reflective of what FinTech is telling us?
Thank you so much, Inessa, and thank you for inviting me to this podcast. I guess I'm always very excited anytime I get to talk about women, and particularly rural women. And because when we look at rural women, majority of them are smallholder farmers, and we know that smallholder farmers contribute a lot to the GDP of Nigeria, not just Nigeria, but across Africa. So, and I also believe that there's not so much opportunities that have been channeled to this demographic. Mm-hmm. So anytime I have an opportunity to speak about them, to advocate mm-hmm. About ease of access, I'm always very, very happy to talk. So thank you once again. So I'll go straight into the question. And to talk about what Findex is telling us. And yes, what Findex has told us is the truth. We have a significant number of women, particularly women in rural and remote areas, who do not have access to appropriate financial services. And I call it appropriate mm-hmm. because then you have someone say, we have financial service providers in the communities that you're mentioning, mm-hmm. but are these financial services, are they readily serving this demographic that we are talking about? Mm-hmm. No. And I've worked across 6 geopolitical zones in Nigeria. I've worked in the southwestern part, mm-hmm. in the southeastern part, and I've worked also extensively in the northern part of Nigeria. And I will tell you freely that women's limited access to financial services is also not a one-size-fits-all. Mm-hmm. Yes, we know that women are marginalized. Women in remote areas have been marginalized from financial services. But when we are looking at the sort of barriers mm-hmm. that have limited women from accessing and using financial services, it's not a one-size-fits-all. So the barrier that we see in the South mm-hmm. is totally different from the barrier that we see in the North. Mm. It varies from region to region. Okay. And this is as a result of, you know, different kind of issues, such as social norms, education mm-hmm. status, location, and level of penetration of financial service providers. Mm-hmm. However, it remains a critical issue that women at the grassroots, they remain excluded. Despite everything that has been said and done by the financial service providers, by the regulators, mm-hmm. by development organizations, why is it that women at the grassroots are still being excluded? Mm-hmm. I would say that while we're looking at the various region, I will start with the southern region. The barrier that I've seen, that I have experienced on the field, has to do mainly around usage. So I would say that we still have a high number of women in the southern part of Nigeria that have opened accounts, that have opened bank accounts. Either is a microfinance, either is a formal financial institution, but when it comes to the usage, mm-hmm. they have accounts that are not working for them. So it's another thing for you to have to have access to a financial service. Yeah. It's another thing for you to be able to use it in a way that elevates your livelihood, in a way that improves your livelihood. Yeah. And that is what we've seen that happens that is happening mm-hmm. in the southern part of Nigeria.
Can I just interrupt you a little? So I hear you talk about usage, which seems to me like even another issue. So there's one, first of all, access to financial services and being banked, and then there's the ones that are banked but don't actually use those accounts to improve their livelihoods or even basically their lifestyles. But I want to go back. So are you saying that in the South, the problem is not really having access to a bank account or owning a bank account? The problem is that they do, but they just don't use those bank accounts. And do we then refer to them as unbanked, or they're not unbanked, are they underbanked? You know, why is this something that is worthy of highlighting?
Yes, I would say they are banked, mm-hmm. but they are underserved.
Underserved.
So that is the
financially
difference.
Underserved. Mm-hmm.
So we have financial products and services that are being pushed to them mm-hmm. that do not take into context the realities of these women.
Right.
So we have a large number of women that have accounts, but to be able to get a loan from a FSP is going to be very difficult because of the stringent, you know, collaterals that are, that is required from them. Most of the times, maybe a woman that is, let's say, for example, a woman, a female farmer that has, 2 plots of land, but has been, and has been farming on this land for quite a while, and she's looking to extend, and she's looking to having access to an hectare of land, and she wants to be able to get a credit from the bank for this. The first thing they will ask is, "Oh, do you have collateral?"
But Tolu, before we get to getting collateral, so here we're talking about the barriers that prevent women from owning a bank account. So in my mind, right, before you can even get to more complex financial services, right, I would imagine that you've at least scaled the barriers that give you that access. So, for instance, for you to be able to get a loan, to get a loan from a bank, it would mean that you have a full service account, or what you call a tier 3 bank account, which actually, exactly. But what we're finding, or what seems to be the case, is for those that can open bank accounts, they don't even have the required documentation, right, to open a bank account. Do you see? So,
So I will touch on that too. Okay. So even though we are even talking about a level of assets that has, that the southern part of Nigeria has, when it comes to bank accounts, majority of these women also have a basic bank account, which typically does not do anything when it does not account for anything substantial, particularly when it comes to like access to credit.
It's basic transactions. And,
yes. So just for basic transactions, you will see some basic accounts that you can't do. You can't transact more than 200,000 naira in a day, or you can't do more than 300,000 naira in a day. And also it becomes more stringent even when we are looking at the digital channels. Oh, you can't use a particular USSD number beyond maybe 50,000 naira. So we have, and as long as women are using those basic accounts, you know, I actually agree that it is an entry point for women having a basic account. But if you're actually looking at scalability for women, commercialization for women, then women must sort of graduate from that basic account to a tier 3 account, where an account that allows them and gives them the, you know, it gives them the privilege to do a lot when it comes to access to credit, when it comes to other services that might be available within that tier 3. But then I will go to the northern region, where I believe we have major challenges, because when we are looking at the northern region, it's majorly around access.
Okay.
We have high number of women that that have never accounted or have never had a bank account. And they are farmers. Majority of them are also in, they are farmers involved in one value chain or the other and various stages of the value chain. But you will realize that they've never opened a bank account.
Yeah.
And when you look at the problems that are responsible for this, it's multi-layered. So we have, and I will start with even identification.
Okay.
Now in Nigeria, before you can open an account, either is a basic account, either is a tier 3 account, the first thing is that you must have a SIM card, your own SIM card. And for you to have your own SIM card, that means that you must have your national identification number. That is a prerequisite for opening an account. Either you want to open it with a fintech, either you want to open that account with a PSB, either you want to open the account with a formal financial institution. So identification, also when you look at it in the northern region, majority of the women in the rural areas do not necessarily see a reason why they should have a former identification number.
Mm-hmm. What's the reason for this?
Because of, I would say social norms.
Okay.
Social norms that are related to gender.
Mm-hmm.
So typically, and I've seen this a lot on the field where you have women that are, when you collect their number.
Yes.
And you go and verify those numbers at the back end, maybe the bank, the FSPs go ahead to verify. You will see a male name coming up. So they will typically give you their husband's number, phone number. They will give you their son's phone number. They themselves, mm-hmm. it's so hard for them to be able to have this identification because they just don't see a reason why they should have a former ID.
So in your interactions with those kind of women, and what is their response like to saying you need to have your, are they, do you find that is it an awareness problem? They don't understand it, or is it that they feel?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. It's lack of awareness. They're just oblivious. To the benefits of a former ID and what they stand to achieve and what is sort of connected to the ownership of a former ID. So if you don't understand the usefulness of something,
mm-hmm.
you would then not be very keen on getting it. So I think that is a major challenge that we have when it comes to access to financial services. Identification is a key challenge, and also financial literacy.
Tolu, sorry, I just want to go into a bit more of, you know, that owning an ID and the behavior of these women. So, is there an instance, or is there like a story that you can share to demonstrate, you know, a woman who realizes the benefits of owning an ID and then has embraced the need to do so, and vice versa, a woman who you've given some sort of understanding, you've helped to understand the benefits of owning an ID and she still refused? Because I imagine that there's some people that also don't think that it aligns with their religious or cultural beliefs and feel that you trying to give them that ID is also making them go against certain social or cultural norms that they find that they're comfortable with. Do you see what I mean? So, for instance, a woman can feel that I don't want to own an ID because my husband is the head of the home, and so I don't need to feel independent from him. He makes all those decisions and it's fine for him to do so. Have you had such experiences?
I would say no. I think it's just purely lack of awareness.
Okay.
Lack of awareness on, I think, maybe what could happen. And what we do, what I've done, is to ensure that there is enough awareness that is being created around the benefits of having an ID and letting them see how it's connected to having a bank account.
Okay.
They need to understand that interconnectedness,
right,
between having a former ID and having a bank account.
Right.
Like, without your ID, you can't get a bank account.
Okay.
So in as much as you're willing to have a bank account, the first step in owning a bank account is for you to have a former ID. So once they are able to see that interrelation, then it becomes easy for them to adopt financial services in itself. And also, I've been to places where, in the northern region, where the acceptance of former identification is very high.
Okay.
I have been to a place where we were
by
doing...
Women?
Sorry?
When you said the acceptance has been very high by women?
Yeah.
Okay.
By women.
Okay.
I've seen them trooping. I've been in places where they've been trooping in tens, in hundreds, coming to capture for NIN. But unfortunately, then you would see maybe because of the make of the machines, because of the some technical glitches,
right,
the machine does not recognize their thumbprints. It does not recognize their face. So right. I have been in situations where we were trying to capture the women, and for one woman to capture, we spend up to 1 hour, more than 1 hour, trying to capture their face, trying to capture their hands. Some we then go back in, you know, they can't wait, because also rural, another thing we need to know is that rural women are very busy. They have a lot of things. They are farmers. They are on the farms. They are taking care of their households. They have children to take care of. They have their families to take care of. They need to go to the market. They need to do a whole lot of things. So if you have a machine that isn't capturing very well, they're going to get tired and they're going to go. And the truth about the situation is that they're not going to come back again.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They're not going to come back and enroll. So whatever need things that needs to be done around also the technical glitches that doesn't really accept or recognize their faces, not just women anyway, but also men, I think something has to be done ASAP. As long as we're looking at the index, we're looking at the numbers, we shouldn't be looking so much, we shouldn't be concentrating so much on the numbers, but looking at what is responsible for this, and how are we fixing this system, how are we ensuring that we are fixing the systems, fixing the constraints that limit women from having access. Yes, I would say that in lots of instances, it has to do with lack of awareness. They don't see how it connects to having a bank account. They don't see why they should have a formal ID. But it's also in some cases where I've seen the technical glitches being responsible for women's, and most of the time, what you see on their face is a feeling of disappointment. They can't do it. They go back and they're not going to come back because they're very strong-minded, which I really, really applaud them
for. Fantastic. Well, so you recall that I had also mentioned that sometimes you want the human stories that sort of highlights these issues and helps us see clearly that this isn't just statistics, this isn't just numbers. These are real people with real problems. I wonder if you can share a story, you know, of a woman in your work experience where you've seen how, you know, adopting financial services has transformed their life significantly, and almost sort of using that as a case study, if you like, of why this work is important and why we continue to advocate for financial inclusion, especially for the marginalized groups like women.
I would say that there's no one case study.
Right.
Because even in the midst of women not really, rural women not really accepting or adopting, financial services.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that there are a lot of case studies, a lot of women that I've also seen that have embraced, even in small, in small measures that have embraced financial services.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been to, there was this woman in Plateau that she, the day that I met her was the day that she was, for the first time, was going to have a NIN. On the same day,
mm-hmm.
was also going to have a bank account opened in Sterling Bank.
Okay.
And I could see on her face, she understood the reason why she was she was carrying out that exercise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She knew that immediately she opens a bank account, she's then able to, you know, save out of a business.
Mm-hmm.
She's able to save. She's able to ensure that her children goes to school.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I saw on her face as I was interviewing her, I could see so much joy.
Mm-hmm.
I could see so much excitement and what she wants to do with that bank account. And another thing that I also saw in that mix,
mm-hmm.
was the support of her spouse.
Oh, fantastic.
So there also she has her husband by her side, you know, just really also excited that his wife was opening a bank account and was encouraging her that from today, whatever proceeds you have from this, so you are going, you have to save a bit of it. And those are the kind of stories that we should also really project out, because it then encourages other women, particularly women from that region, to see that, you know, having a bank account is liberating. Having a bank account also does not mean that you are going against the wishes of your husband. Right. It also means that your husband could support you in this process as you open that bank account. Not just open the bank account, but also use the bank account and use it to scale even your small business, move to into have other income generating activities, and then be able to be a supportive partner to our husband.
Absolutely.
I think so. These stories are very important for us to tell, because also when we are telling stories, with the stories that we've told in time past, our stories of, oh, it's not working and it's not working at all, I disagree completely. I think that they are interesting stories. They are interesting impact stories that we could tell, and also use it to encourage other women, from particularly from the region, to let them know that, you know, there are women that are doing, that are opening bank accounts, that are using the bank accounts, and their husbands are supportive of them, and that having a bank account and using the bank account, you also even enable them to be better supportive partners to their husbands.
Fantastic.
I think it's very important for us to project this kind of stories.
You're right, Tolu, and I couldn't agree more with you. It's important to share these stories to inspire other women and to help them see that they too can be these women who are liberated and empowered, and for other men who have contrary opinions to see how men can also be enablers of these women empowerment efforts. So just before we close out on this episode, I'd just like to ask you, from your experience and understanding from the field, what are two things, right, that the key stakeholders in the financial inclusion ecosystem can do to ensure more women are enrolled?
Thank you very much. I particularly love this question, because then I'm going to address it to the different stakeholders that we have in the space. So I will start with...
Very quickly.
Let me start with, let me start with the FSPs.
Sure.
Stop seeing women as the monoliths. Women are not a monolith. We have various segments within the, you know, within the
demography
for the women. And FSPs should believe that there's a business case within the segment of rural women. Rural women, female smallholder farmers that are majorly based in rural areas, are 80% of the smallholder farmers in Nigeria.
Right.
And we know that smallholder farmers contribute, are also like, contribute 70 to 80% of the food that we produce in Nigeria. That means that designing contextualized financial services and products for rural women, for female smallholder farmers, is smart economics. Everybody wins. So please take time to understand this segment and design products and services that actually will work for them.
Right.
That is for financial sector, financial service providers.
Okay.
For regulators or for government agencies, I would say that we need to take a step back in understanding what these hindrances are. Is it infrastructure? Is it social norms? We need to understand, even before policies are formulated, even before things are rolled out, we need to understand what exactly is the problem. And then let's work backwards and have a community or community-based engagement in which, you know, we can say we've really listened to the women.
Yes.
And apart from listening to the women, we've also taken, you know, conscious steps in addressing the issues that affect them. If it's infrastructure, a lot of women, when we're talking about financial services. The reason why a lot of women are still involved in informal finance are because they are unable to have to cash out their money. They are not available
distribution channels.
Mm-hmm. Yes, point of sale agents in their communities. So what then happens? Do we want to begin to train a lot of community-based POS agents? Because that could be something that the government could take on. Yes, while we have this robust agent network that we have in Nigeria, I also believe that not so much attention is being paid to the people in the rural areas. Right. And I've been to places where in 1 kilometer, you might not see any POS. And we understand that there has to be a need for it. But if someone in their community who have access to mm-hmm. POS, mm-hmm. it will be easy for them to have that cash in and cash out transaction.
Right.
I think that is very important. And for development programs, I think one thing that I would say to development programs is the need for partnerships.
Okay.
Enough of working in silos. There are lots of different development programs that are doing amazing things when it comes to women inclusion, when it comes to gender programming. Can we work together with the government so much that we are able to relate the challenges that we are seeing on the field, feed it to the government so that the government can, you know, design or formulate new good policy, inclusive policies. And then the FSPs are also then mandated to take a pause and design products, contextualize products and services for the women.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Tolu, for sharing with us from your wealth of experience and also insights on what the key stakeholders should do. I like the way you've specifically sort of given us ideas of what the specific stakeholder groups can do to ensure that women do not remain excluded.
Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to talk about women, to talk about rural women, to talk about how to increase access to them. And I also would just appreciate the work that you're doing, ensuring that the voices of the people that are working behind the scenes are heard, because it is the people on the field that actually know what is happening, what the challenges are. Yes, we sit in our offices and we think about, oh, this is what we should design for women because this is what we think works for women. No, it doesn't work that way. It is the people on the field that have seen, that have experienced, that have walked in the shoes of the women that actually are in better position to inform the designers of these products and services on the sort of products they should be designing.
Fantastic.
Thank you very much, and thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
Awesome. So, at Inclusion for All, our primary objective remains to drive awareness about the barriers to formal inclusion of vulnerable groups while advocating for the policy and behavioral changes that will remove those barriers. It's always a pleasure to have people like Tolu who engage with these beneficiary groups on the field to tell us more about what those experiences are and to give nuanced insights on what these problems are. Our ongoing campaign on identity is one of such efforts to remove the barriers to inclusion. Data tells us that women are more likely to be excluded from earning a formal ID, and the gender gap is also reflected in the NIN enrollment figures. As at July 2022, the NIN enrollment data from NIMSI reveals that of 85.6 million enrolled into the ID ecosystem, 44% were women, compared to 56% men. As evidenced by the findings from the World Bank's Barriers to the Inclusion of Women and Marginalized Groups in Nigeria's ID System study, some social-cultural norms and hindrances leave women less likely to access ID and economic participation. And this needs to change. Thank you for listening to another episode of Inclusion for All Radio. Catch you on another episode. To learn more about the Inclusion for All Advocacy Initiative and to access more insightful data about financial inclusion for the marginalized groups in Nigeria, please visit our website, inclusion-for-all.org. and find us across our socials on LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube at Inclusion for All.